Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Tonight, President Joe Biden will stumble his way through his State of the Union address, but it will be his last. I've been saying it for nearly a year and a half now. Joe Biden will not be the Democratic nominee on the ballot in November. Do you really think the Democrats are going to risk another Donald Trump presidency by putting up a human vegetable that 86% of Americans, including the vast majority of Democrats, don't approve of or want on that ballot? No, because there aren't enough early mail-in or harvested ballots that can hide the steep decline of Joe Biden. He was slipping in 2020. He's been on the literal ground for 2 years, and the Democrats simply cannot take that risk. Not on Joe and not on Kamala. I know a lot of folks rightfully point out the Democrats have boxed themselves in with Kamala. If not Joe, they just have to go with Kamala due to her box checking of being a black female. You're not wrong. They did pigeonhole themselves into that predicament. But you're forgetting one very important variable here. Democrats make the rules, and they can break the rules. Sure, it's going to be a PR problem when they pass over Kamala. No doubt about it. There will be some outrage on social media. But do you really think those outraged folks are going to be so truly outraged they will revolt against the Democrat Party or vote for Donald Trump? Get real. Those people will either not vote at all or they will still vote Democrat. Democrat voters don't like Kamala any more than they like Joe. In fact, they like her even less. She was a Democrat presidential candidate in 2020, and she was one of the very first to drop out due to the fact her own party did not want her and did not vote for her. Spoiler alert, she hasn't gotten any more popular since then. Democrats will not go down in flames with Joe Biden or Kamala Harris. But how are they going to do it? How are they going to jury-rig this mess together? How are they going to dump Joe and Kamala in time for the November election? And will August Democratic National Convention in Chicago be more of a performative bloodbath than the WWE SummerSlam? Well, here to break down how it's all going to go down is former White House press secretary and host of the Sean Spicer Show, Sean Spicer. Sean, I know you're a self-proclaimed nerd about all of this, so I want to get into the logistics because a lot of people say it's going to go down at the convention, but they don't really know how it's going to go down at the convention. So you got to walk us through what's going to happen in your vision.
Yeah, I got to say, first of all, I always love the fact that you never leave any question to where you stand on the table. Tommy Lahren lets you know every time. That's why I love the show. Look, on the Republican side, it's pretty easy. Rule 9 of the Republican National Committee rules make it clear that if there's a vacancy, the RNC can fill it. That's the job of the governing body, frankly. And the Dems have a similar process. It's a little different. And this gets to your point. There's three stages, if you will. There's the before, the during, and the after. And so Joe Biden, like Donald Trump, is accumulating delegates right now. Those are his delegates. If we look at it on the Republican side, because everyone keeps talking about, you know, why did someone stay in the race? Why didn't they? It's not like the second place person gets anything. Those are still bound to that person. What does that mean? They're like, they're almost like theirs. They own them, if you will. And so they go to that convention until they become unbound. Well, how do they become unbound? Two ways, basically. One is either you drop out as a candidate or you would die. I mean, to be not callous, but to be blunt. That's the only way that would work. So they can't be taken away from you. There's no mechanism in the rules to say, hey, we don't like you. You did this following. You were a bad boy or a bad girl. And if you win the delegates, they're yours to keep. And as I said, on the Republican side, Rule 9 says, hey, once you become the nominee on the Republican side, if you were to vacate that for any reason, then the committee would reconstitute itself, use the votes per state, meaning the national committee man, woman, and chairman from every state would get the number of delegates cast to that state to vote for who the new nominee would be. But when I say before, during, and after, it's if you think about Biden or Trump, if it's before, let's say Trump or Biden before the convention dropped out, they still own those delegates. They can unbind them, which means they can say, okay, you are my delegate, I free you. But it would still then go to the convention. On the Republican side, it takes 1,215 delegates to become the nominee. So when they go on the Republican side to Milwaukee, then the delegates would vote. And frankly, Tommy, the thing that's funny is prior to 1972, this is how it did work. There were some primaries, but they were almost like beauty contests, is the way they're referred to sometimes in politics. They didn't matter. It was just a way of showing your political strength and fortitude, but it didn't count for anything. And the delegates always were the final say. And frankly, that's how it's set up to be. So if Biden or Kamala dropped out, it would then be up to the delegates to select that replacement. After the convention, then it's up to the DNC and the RNC. And one of the things that, to your point during my intro, yes, I'm a political nerd. There's two things that happen at a convention. Everybody pays attention to the first one, which is the nominating of the president and the vice president. The other thing that happens is it reconstitutes each of those conventions, the RNC and the DNC, as the governing bodies, meaning that for the 4 years that intervene between conventions, the delegates of the party, of the movement, have given the authority to these two bodies, the RNC and the DC, to the DNC, to conduct business on their behalf until the next convention. So once the convention is gaveled down, they then have the complete authority to replace anybody if they were to drop out or pass away.
And unfortunately, that's a very realistic problem that one candidate faces. You know, some could say the other candidate, because of his age, might face that, but I think it's much more probable for the other. I'll let the audience figure out which one I'm talking about. They can come to their own conclusion on that one. But when we get to this convention, right? So I believe it's not going to happen before the convention. Joe Biden's going to cling on. And I think that the DNC, the Democrat Party, I think that they are very well aware that Joe Biden is going to cling on. I believe that's part of the plan. They don't want him to step aside now. They want to wait. I believe that they want this to go down at the convention. They have to have him as, you know, some semblance of him being in charge right now to ramrod the last little bit of their socialist communist agenda through in the months remaining. So I don't think anything's going to change, and I don't think they want it to, but I think they want it to go down at this convention. I believe it's going to be Gavin Newsom. I don't believe it's going to be Kamala Harris. I don't believe it's going to be Michelle Obama. Any of these other names that people are throwing out, I don't think so. I think there's one clear person that's been running a shadow campaign that's ready to go, and that's Gavin Newsom. So let's go into that world at the DNC, and let's just say Gavin Newsom, who I believe is a super delegate for Joe Biden, is waiting in the wings there. And then Joe Biden, they're going to convince him, you know, he's either going to be so out of it, or they're going to tell him, hey, listen, you got to go, buddy. He's going to be so out of it, and he's going to say, listen, I'm stepping down. Then what does that look like at that convention in order for Gavin Newsom to become that nominee?
So look, I'm with you. I've agreed with your analysis that Gavin Newsom is running a shadow campaign. The one thing I will tell you that always gives me pause about this, because I believe that he is the one that he wants it more than anybody else. I think a lot of mainstream Democrats look at him as the individual that can articulate the agenda better than anybody. And he's so good looking with that hair. But the problem I have is that the people who are delegates on the left are kind of the same way they are on the right. These are the faithful. And the idea that a bunch of people who walk around and get insulted if you don't use their pronouns are going to pick a white straight guy is something I just can't wrap my head around.
But they would go with Joe Biden, a white straight guy who's got one foot in the crypt?
Go with him. Remember, this goes back to what I was saying. Joe Biden has snuffed out any competition, right? So he had Marianne Williamson and Dean Phillips, who Marianne Williamson has already dropped out.
Marianne Williamson is unsuspended. Well, Marianne Williamson has decided to unsuspend her campaign. Not that that really matters, but she has.
But the bottom line is, once he has the requisite number of delegates and it's a different it's a higher because they have more people, quote unquote, in their delegate pool. Once he gets that, you can't, it's over. And that's why by canceling the Florida primary, doing all these undemocratic things that they've done, they've ensured he is the candidate. They've created a situation where you cannot challenge Joe Biden. So he, to your point, the only way this works is the scenario that you laid out, that it has to be done. Now, let me throw out a scenario that I'll get back to yours in a second. The one thing that has been told to me that has given me pause is go back to what I said a minute ago. Let's assume that the convention comes and goes. Joe Biden accepts the nomination, which, by the way, has legal consequences. It allows you to spend the additional funds. When you raise money from a donor, you can, I think it's now $3,200 on from primary in general. You can officially tap into that. There is something called the Presidential Trust, which is about $27 million in coordinated funds that the party can coordinate with the candidate, the nominee, but they must be declared the nominee by the party. So there's a legal aspect of this nomination that is important to understand. It's not just going to Chicago or Milwaukee and attending a party. You legally become the nominee, and that allows you to do something in terms of spending money and coordination that the Federal Election Commission has put in law. So it's important. But the other scenario that I'm getting at is the following. Biden could go to the convention. He could accept the nomination and then say a week later or 2 weeks later, say, I have decided that I'm going to step down. And then it throws to what I was saying before, the DNC members, a much smaller pool, a much more loyal group of people to Joe Biden. And he says, I'm going to step down and here's how I want this to go. Now, that's how I actually am starting to believe that, because here's what I'll tell you before I get back to your scenario. It gives him the ability to put his legacy on this and say, I helped elevate X, Y, or Z, this person. If it goes down at the convention, if he says, I can't do this anymore, there was a flight of stairs, I just couldn't get up them. And he can't become the nominee. He doesn't accept the nomination. The delegates would literally hash it out. It would get thrown to the floor and they would start a series of votes. And those votes would go, it would be a series of roll call votes. Someone's name would get put into nomination. They would ask for a second, et cetera, et cetera. And then they would just start doing roll call votes by the states. And until somebody hit the requisite number of delegates, so you would go, you know, down the states, Alabama, Arkansas, Alaska, and they would read off their talent, you know, the state of Alaska hereby allocates its 100 delegates, 33 to Gavin Newsom, 22 to Kamala Harris, I mean, 4 to Pete Buttigieg, whatever. And they would keep doing roll call votes until somebody hit the threshold. Once you hit the threshold, boom, you'd become the nominee and that's it. And then you get all of the legal trappings of becoming the nominee of the party. So if it goes down at the convention, it gets thrown to the delegates. And it's like, again, if you go back pre-1972, or you go back and look at Chicago, the last time the Dems had this, you know, that wasn't a pretty scene. That's what happened the day after the convention, after you have a nominee. If that nominee were to step down or relinquish the nomination at that point, then the universe, as I said, becomes very small and controllable. It's the DNC or the RNC. The RNC is only 168 members. The DNC is closer to 1,000. And now suddenly, and those people are usually much more loyal to the incumbent. So the reason I say I've started to question that maybe that's the scenario, is that Biden can say, I really want to control this more than allowing the delegates to pick.
Well, I think two things here. I think that Joe Biden doesn't have as much control over the Democrat Party as Joe Biden thinks he has over the Democrat Party. If this were a Republican scenario, I mean, how long did it take us to pick a Speaker of the House, and how many times did it take us to get one that stuck? And maybe they'll still get rid of him. Who knows? I mean, on the Republican side, it would be a nightmare. Democrats not the same, though. Democrats fall in line. Democrats have a plan. They have a notion, and they go with it, and they all go with it. And there's very little contention amongst Democrats, even if a few of them pipe up here and there. At the end of the day, they all fall in line. So I don't have any doubt in my mind, if the powers that be, whoever's currently running the government, decides Joe is out, Joe is out. And whether that comes down to delegates having to fight it out or Joe Biden afterwards stepping down after he is the nominee, I think you still have the same situation. I would also say Gavin Newsom has been royally kissing up to Joe Biden. So if you're right about that second scenario, I think that Joe Biden would pick Gavin Newsom. I don't think he likes Kamala much. And I think that Gavin Newsom has really been sitting there like this loyal little understudy with, you know, a knife in hand. So I think that either way, I think it's Gavin, but I don't think it's Kamala. And I know a lot of people think, oh, it's got to be her. I just don't see a world where that's possible. And I know that they say, oh, they got to pick a black woman, all this stuff. They make up their own rules.
Look, there's a couple things. And again, I go back and forth. I feel like sometimes I feel like a ping pong ball because I have a hard time. Joe Biden's entire administration has been identity politics. It's not about qualification. It's about whether you're a left-handed, one-eyed, black, gay person that uses four pronouns. I mean, that's like, look at how many boxes we checked. And I can't, for the life of me, get my head around the fact that you then would hand something off to a straight white guy. That's where I can't. Every single thing that they have done is identity politics for 4 years. I get it. I look at Gavin Newsom and I'm going, that's the guy I'd pick. I mean, he can make some of their stink not smell. But I think we think too rationally about this. Who would be good? They don't think that way. If you actually cared about qualification, would you want Corinne Jean-Pierre speaking on your behalf? I don't think so. Would you want Kamala Harris being your number two? I don't think so. Part of me keeps reminding myself that they're not thinking the same way that you and I think about things.
I want to discuss that, though, because I believe that Democrat voters are emotional. I believe the Democrat Party, though, the powers that be, I don't believe they're emotional at all. I believe they're manipulative and I believe they are calculated. I believe that they know how to manipulate the emotional. So I believe that they put in all these people's positions because the voters like to look at the diversity and the tolerance. But I think when it comes right down to it, they are cutthroat and they don't want to lose. And I think they know.
But you know what? Let me throw out one more caveat to this, because I think you're absolutely right. I had Newt Gingrich on my podcast probably a week and a half ago, right? And what Newt said to me was really interesting. He said exactly kind of the case that you're making, but he said there are so many people whose power is tied to Joe Biden, right? That the these folks need him to be that vessel. And you know, because it's not tough right now. It's not like he actually they're all making the decisions, to your point about the powers that be. Mm-hmm. Them giving that up. And that's where I think Newt was at. Again, it's like smart people make me think like this. And I was like, you know what? He's got a point that these people don't want to give up that vessel. To them right now, they just say, you sit in the chair, we'll pull the strings, we're going to make all the following happen. And they're not ready necessarily to give all that up. And that is something that I still kind of wonder, do they wheel? It's like Weekend at Bernie's. I mean, they're wheeling the guy out, thinking to themselves, we just need to keep him looking like he's still there.
But I don't think they can do it. I think that they have been able to do it up until this point, but I think it's getting so bad at this point. There's one thing. You can hide the guy in the basement. You can give him a jumbo teleprompter. You can shoot him up with whatever to get him through a State of the Union address. But I don't think you can fake it for long enough to make it viable. And I don't think that as this progresses, the next 6 months, next year and a half, I don't think Joe Biden is even going to be in a cognitive place where he's going to be able to even stand on his own. And they can do a lot. They're magicians over the left, but they're not that magical.
No, it's going to be tough. At some point, when you can't go up the short stairs, you got to wonder. I mean, at some point, they're going to have to get one of those little things that you see them, you know, the chairs that go outside. It's bad.
It's bad. Again, I just think it's going to be Gavin. I think that they say all this stuff about how they want diversity picks, but they don't put diversity picks.
Well,
in
you know when you're
going to
know
important.
You're right. You're going to know you're right when Gavin starts coming out and says my pronouns are she they.
Well, he already does front that stuff in California, though, because he has positioned himself as the champion for all this crap, the champion of reparations, the champion of LGBTQ, the champion of abortion. So whereas he might be a white straight male, he says and does all the right things to make everybody else who plays in a different pond feel comfortable. So that's why I still contend it's going to be Gavin Newsom, and he can get away with all of that because he speaks so well and so eloquently. Kamala Harris, she might have the skin color and the gender going going for her, but she cannot message like Gavin Newsom. I don't think it's going to be her. I don't think Michelle Obama wants it. She's got way too much money and power already. I don't think she wants this life. But I do have to turn now to what's going to happen on the Republican side. I firmly believe Donald Trump's going to be the nominee. I don't believe he's going to drop out. I think that he will run from behind bars. But let's just say a certain situation turns out to where he cannot run for whatever reason. Legally, he's legally incapacitated. And I don't know what that would take. I think it would take a lot. But then what happens on our side? I don't think anybody goes the Nikki Haley route. So is it Ron DeSantis? Who is it then?
So look, let me just take the first piece first. And I get the hypothetical, so you've put it well. I was with Trump in 2015, 2016. I was with him the weekend of Access Hollywood. So he will literally have to be in a jail that's underground with, I mean, like the guy will never not run. But let's just for fun, to your point, play this out. As I said, Rule 9 of the RNC makes it clear that after the convention, if there is a vacancy in the nomination for either president or vice president, the RNC members, the 168 members, three from every state and territory, make that decision. And so here's the other kicker in this. At the convention, right now, almost every state, Tennessee, Virginia, whatever, are electing or reelecting chairman, national committee man, national committee woman. Their term begins at the end of the convention. Okay. So, and then there's a meeting that occurs by rule right there. So I say that because Trump right now is weighing into a lot of states and making his picks known for who he wants as, you know, the committee man or committee woman from, you know, pick a state. And so you will have a much more MAGA friendly RNC of the 168 members. To your point about who would they pick, my guess is that whomever his vice presidential pick, in my opinion, would be the clear front runner. So whoever that person is that Donald Trump has put his stamp on and said, this is who I believe would be my pick for number two, would immediately start as the front runner for that position.
See, I think that would get incredibly tricky. I don't think we're ever going to come to this point, by the way. I really do believe Donald Trump's going to be on the ballot. But, you know, stranger things have happened in this country with the way everything's going, unfortunately. But I just don't believe whoever he picks as his VP, I don't think that person is going to have enough of a presence to win in a national election and be that top person on that ticket.
So I think part of this depends on the hypothetical that we're playing out. If the hypothetical is he was somehow lost at sea. I don't want to use, I mean, because right where he couldn't communicate. Then I think that's a very different scenario. And I would agree with you on that front. If he were able to communicate, he was just detained somewhere or something. And he made his wishes known, that RNC, as I said, is going to be a lot more friendly and loyal to him because many of the 168 members will have just gotten elected because and with him. So therefore, they're going to say, hey, if this is who he says is the person, I'm going with him.
I just don't think he'd want to pick somebody that would lose. I don't think he wants to lose. So I think whoever his VP pick is going to be is probably going to be a great person. But I don't think it's going to be a leader. I don't think he puts people in that position, quite frankly, that are charismatic leaders, because I don't think he wants to share the spotlight. So I think his VP pick is going to be someone completely different than if he was completely unable to run. I think that Donald Trump would say, all right, I'm going to put the person in there that I believe could best carry forth this agenda and win an election. And to me, there's only one person, and I've said it a long time, and that's Ron DeSantis, and that's it. And that would be the most strategic decision if that were to happen. I don't think it's going to happen, but we like to play, you know, hypotheticals. In closing, I want to talk about just brief predictions for the State of the Union tonight. I'm not expecting a lot of fireworks. I'm expecting a lot of gaffes, maybe some whispers, maybe some yelling moments. But just a prediction from you on what you think we're going to see from the president tonight. And do you think he's going to say anything earth-shattering that's going to make a big difference?
So I think you're going to see a lot of pandering on the border. They recognize it's a weakness. They're going to try. It was going to be a rehash of everything that he just did down there in Texas, where he says he extends an olive branch to their non-border bill, which is what it is. So I think he's going to try to take, he's going to try to maybe throw out a couple of jokes. They are trying to use this. And let's face it, a speech is a speech. Because you can stand there for 35 minutes and not fall down does not mean that you are in good shape. It just means that you can stand in a spot for for 35 minutes and read a teleprompter. I think he's going to try to use this as an opportunity to show that he wants to work together to blow people away and say, I know for 3 years I haven't reached out to anybody and I've called people on the right a bunch of despicable things, but now suddenly I actually care about you. So my guess is you're going to see a lot of olive branch outreach, and that it's going to last between 35 and 40 minutes, that they want to beat expectations, which Kenny stands somewhere for 30 minutes, not much longer. And I think they're going to try to keep him very scripted because they don't want, they get it. Here are their vulnerabilities. The thing that I'm going to watch, and this goes back to our last segment issue here, is how does Katie Britt do? There's no question in my mind, this is an audition for her. And it has not gone well for a lot of people giving their Republican response. So how does Katie Britt do? Because I've heard enough people saying that this is her audition.
Well, it's going to be very interesting to see if Joe can just make it through.
If there was like intermission, this would be like the first State of the Union where it's like, we'll be back in 10 minutes.
Or the first State of the Union that's on tape, kind of like the Super Bowl address where it's just on tape. I mean, it wouldn't shock me. It wouldn't shock me. Sean, thank you for walking us through all that. I have so much more knowledge now, and now I'm equipped with all the technical elements that I need to discuss Gavin Newsom being the Democrat nominee. And I thank you for that sincerely. Thank you for coming on the show as always. I super appreciate you, and I'll talk to you soon.
You bet. Thanks a lot.
All right, folks. That does it for this episode of Tommy Lahren is Fearless. Make sure you're watching that wonderful State of the Union address tonight. Hopefully we can all just make our way through it. But for now, from Nashville, God bless and take care.